Humidius, A Brief History of Tomorrow. This is page 214. In exchange for giving up power, pre-modern humans believed that their lives gained meaning. It really mattered whether they fought bravely on the battlefield, whether they supported the lawful king, whether they ate forbidden foods for breakfast, or whether they had an affair with the next-door neighbor. This created some inconveniences, of course, but it gave humans psychological protection against disasters. If something terrible happened, such as war, plague, or drought, people console themselves that we all play a role in some great cosmic drama devised by the gods or by the laws of nature. We are not privy to the script, but we can rest assured that everything happens for a purpose. Even this terrible war, plague, and drought have their place in the greater scheme of things. Furthermore, we can count on the playwright that the story surely has a good ending. So even the war, plague, and drought will work out for the best, if not here and now, then in the afterlife. Modern culture rejects this belief in a great cosmic plan. We are not actors in any larger-than-life drama. Life has no script, no playwright, no director, no producer, and no meaning. To the best of our scientific understanding, the universe is a blind and purposeless process, full of sound and fury, but signifying nothing. During our very small brief stay on our tiny speck of a planet, we fret and strut this way and that, and then are heard of no more. Since there is no script, and since humans fulfill no role in any great drama, terrible things might befall us, and no power will come to save us, or give meaning to our suffering. There won't be a happy ending, or a bad ending, or any ending at all. Things just happen, one after the other. The modern world does not believe in purpose, only in cause. If modernity has a motto, it is, shit happens. On the other hand, if shit just happens, without any binding script or purpose, then humans too are not limited to any predetermined role. We can do anything we want, provided we can find a way. We are constrained by nothing except our own ignorance. Plagues and droughts have no cosmic meaning, but we can eradicate them. Wars are not a necessary evil on the way to a better future, but we can make peace. No paradise awaits us after death, but we can create paradise here on Earth and live in it forever if we just manage to overcome some technical difficulties. If we invest money in research, then scientific breakthroughs will accelerate technological progress. New technologies will fuel economic growth, and a growing economy could dedicate even more money to research. With each passing decade, we will enjoy more food, faster vehicles, and better medicines. One day, our knowledge will be so vast and our technology so advanced that we could distill the elixir of eternal youth, the elixir of true happiness, and any other drug we might possibly desire, and no god will stop us. The modern deal thus offers humans an enormous temptation, coupled with a colossal threat. Omnipotence is in front of us, almost within our reach. But below us yawns the abyss of complete nothingness. On the practical level, modern life consists of a constant pursuit of power within a universe devoid of meaning. Modern culture is the most powerful in history, and it is ceaselessly researching, inventing, discovering, and growing. At the same time, it is plagued by more existential angst than any previous culture. This chapter discusses the modern pursuit of power. The next chapter will examine how humankind has used its growing power to somehow sneak meaning back into the infinite emptiness of the cosmos. Yes, we moderns have promised to renounce meaning in exchange for power, but there's nobody out there to hold us to our promise. We think we are smart enough to enjoy the full benefits of the modern deal without paying its price. Why bankers are different from vampires. The modern pursuit of power is fueled by the alliance between scientific progress and economic growth. For most of history, science progressed at a snail's pace while the economy was in deep freeze. The gradual increase in human population did lead to a corresponding increase in production, and sporadic discoveries sometimes resulted in per capita growth, but this was a very slow process. If in AD 1000, 100 villages produced 100 tons of wheat, and in AD 1100, 105 villages produced 107 tons of wheat, this growth did not change the rhythms of life or the socio-political order. Whereas today, everyone is obsessed with growth, in the pre-modern era, people were oblivious to it. Princes, priests, and peasants assumed that human production was more or less stable, that one person could enrich himself only by pilfering somebody else, and that their grandchildren were unlikely to enjoy a better standard of living. This stagnation resulted to a large extent from the difficulties involved in financing new projects. Without proper funding, it was not easy to drain swamps, construct bridges, and build ports, not to mention engineer new wheat strains, discover new energy sources, or open new trade routes. Funds were scarce because there was little credit in those days. There was little credit because people had no belief in growth, and people did not believe in growth because the economy was stagnant. Stagnation thereby perpetuated itself. Suppose you live in a medieval town that suffers from annual outbreaks of dysentery. You resolve to find a cure. You need funding to set up a lab, buy medicinal herbs and exotic chemicals, pay assistance, and travel to consult with famous doctors. You also need money to feed yourself and your family while you are busy with your research. But you don't have much money. You can approach the local lumberjack, blacksmith, and baker and ask them to fulfill all your needs for a few years, promising that when you finally discover the cure and become rich, you will pay your debts. Unfortunately, the lumberjack, blacksmith, and baker are unlikely to agree. They need to feed their families today, and they have no faith in miracle medicines. They were not born yesterday, and in all their years, they have never heard of anyone finding a new medicine for some dreaded disease. If you want provisions, you must pay cash. But how can you have enough money when you have not discovered the medicine yet, and all your time is taken up with research? Reluctantly, you go back to tilling your field. Dysentery keeps tormenting the townsfolk. Nobody tries to develop new remedies, and not a single gold coin changes hands. That's how the economy froze and science stood still. The cycle was eventually broken in the modern age thanks to people's growing trust in the future and the resulting miracle of credit. Credit is the economic manifestation of trust. Today, if I want to develop a new drug but I don't have enough money, I can get a loan from the bank or turn to private investors and venture capital funds. When Ebola erupted in West Africa in the summer of 2014, what do you think happened to the shares of pharmaceutical companies that were busy developing anti-Ebola drugs and vaccines? They skyrocketed. Tecmira shares rose by 50% and BioCrist shares by 90%. In the Middle Ages, the outbreak of a plague caused people to raise their eyes towards heaven and pray to God to forgive them for their sins. Today, when people hear of some new deadly epidemic, they pick up the phone and call their broker. For the stock exchange, even an epidemic is a business opportunity. If enough new ventures succeed, people's trust in the future increases, credit expands, interest rates fall, entrepreneurs can raise money more easily, and the economy grows. People consequently have even greater trust in the future, the economy keeps growing, and science progresses with it. It sounds simple on paper. Why then did humankind have to wait until the modern era for economic growth to gather momentum? For thousands of years, people had little faith in future growth, not because they were stupid, but because it contradicts our gut feelings, our evolutionary heritage, and the way the world works. Most natural systems exist in equilibrium, and most survival struggles are a zero-sum game in which one can prosper only at the expense of another. For example, each year roughly the same amount of grass grows in a given valley. The grass supports a population of about 10,000 rabbits, which contains enough slow, dim-witted, or unlucky rabbits to provide prey for 100 foxes. If one fox is very diligent and captures more rabbits than usual, then another fox will probably starve to death. If all foxes somehow manage to capture more rabbits simultaneously, the rabbit population will crash, and next year, many foxes will starve. Even though there are occasional fluctuations in the rabbit market, in the long run, the foxes cannot expect to hunt, say, 3% more rabbits per year than the preceding year. Of course, some ecological realities are more complex, and not all survival struggles are zero-sum games. Many animals cooperate effectively, and a few even give loans. The most famous lenders in nature are vampire bats. These vampires congregate in their thousands in their thousands inside caves. And every night they fly out to look for prey. When they find a sleeping bird or a careless mammal, they make a small incision in its skin and suck its blood. Not all bats find a victim every night. In order to cope with the uncertainty of their life, the vampires loan blood to each other. A vampire that fails to find prey will come home and ask for some stolen blood from a more fortunate friend. Vampires remember very well to whom they loaned blood, so at a later date, if the friend comes home empty-handed, he will approach his debtor, who will return the favor. However, unlike human bankers, vampires never charge interest. If Vampire A loaned Vampire B 10 centiliters of blood, B will repay the same amount. Nor do vampires use loans in order to finance new businesses or encourage growth in the blood-sucking market. Because the blood is produced by other animals, the vampires have no way of increasing production. Though the blood market has its ups and downs, vampires cannot presume that in 2017 there will be 3% more blood than in 2016, and that in 2018 the blood market will again grow by 3%. Consequently, vampires do not believe in growth. For millions of years of evolution, humans lived under similar conditions to vampires, foxes, and rabbits. Hence, humans too find it difficult to believe in growth.